June is LGBTQ Pride Month. During Episode 3 of Stepping Stone Museum for Children's Under the Cupola podcast, we talk with representatives from the Triangle Community Center, Fairfield County's leading provider of programming and resources for our area's LGBTQ community. The COVID-19 pandemic was an isolating experience for many, but particularly for LGBTQ youth and those who are continuing or just beginning a journey of self-discovery. The Triangle Community Center's Executive Director, Edson Rivas, and Director of Programs, Sydney Hank, talk with our own Robert Towns about how the Norwalk-based organization serves as an important mental health resource for these youth. The trio discusses ways that parents or caregivers can be supportive if they suspect their own child may be LGBTQ+ or questioning. They also explain how we, as a community, can all serve as supporters or allies for these children, who often experience a great deal of bias and judgment based on their orientation or identity. In June, the Triangle Community Center has an exciting slate for Pride Month events and activities. We touch on that and so much more. So without further delay, here's Robert, Edson, and Sydney.
So thank you both for being here today. We look forward to a wonderful conversation. Can you tell us a little bit about the Triangle Community Center and its mission in the community and how you serve this wonderful area of our state?
Yeah. So Triangle Community Center has actually been around for 30 years, but it's only recently, I think around 2013, that we started growing rapidly. In 2013, we had our first executive director, and sort of we've been growing ever since then. So Triangle Community Center empowers and advocates for LGBTQ individuals in Connecticut through programming focused on community, health, and learning. So what are those things? Community is all of our peer support programs, all of our social programming. That's community for us, all of the events, Pride in the Park. Health, we have two major things in health. So we have a mental health services where we take MFT students, so marriage and family therapists that provide therapy and counseling. And we also have case management. So that's part of our clinical group. And then learning is one of our biggest pieces. And learning for us is through our training institute. And we do trainings for nonprofits, for-profits, where we teach them sort of like the basics of what being LGBTQ means so that they have a better understanding and how to be a better ally. So those are some of the things that we do.
So the mission of Stepping Stones is to broaden and enrich the educational opportunities for children, mm-hmm. 10 and under, and also enhancing their understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we're talking more about enhancing understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. This pandemic has impacted so many people in so many ways, and I imagine, especially for LGBTQ plus youth, that there's been some great impacts during this time of the pandemic. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the things that you've seen at your community center?
Yeah, I mean, across the board with youth in general, we're seeing increased isolation, you know, a reliance on social media and the internet, and as that's how they're getting their schooling, that's how they're only able to see their friends. When we're talking about LGBTQ youth, they're already facing isolation, and that ends up being what we're seeing, at least anecdotally, is that we're seeing that being compounded. If they're coming out during this time, they're not able to get that peer support, that school support, where there are counselors as readily. So we're also seeing increased anxiety and depression there as well.
So how are you working to address these issues?
Yeah, so we've actually renewed our groups with youth and younger clients and to make sure that they have a community that they can go to and really be themselves if they're not able to be out and with the rest of the community at large, that they're able to at least virtually meet other kids that are like them. And Zoom has been fantastic for that because we've been able to expand, you know, necessarily even outside of the state. And so that we're able to help all kids find a place where they feel like they can belong.
We're also doing a lot of research or outreach to counselors in these schooling systems just so that they understand that we're here as a resource for them. So if a kid comes out to them through virtual means, you know, they have someone to refer that child to us for mental health services or for any of our programming that they could use. So we're also doing that as well.
So it's your outreach because has the pandemic disrupted some of the normal communication that you used to have with the school districts?
Yeah, so some of the school districts, particularly the high schools, we used to have like days where we would go to the high schools to have like either case management there or mental health services there as well. But now that we're no longer in school, nothing is in person, we've had to move those to the virtual world. So we're doing a lot of things through Zoom, through telehealth. We have a Discord channel for our programming as well.
So we talk about mental health. Also, you said the organization addresses physical health as well. Have there been any programs or anything that you guys have done to help with the physical health of people in your community?
Yeah, kind of at large. We've started offering physical health classes. So we have a strength and wellness class because a lot of people in the LGBTQ community don't necessarily feel safe going to a program at a more mundane gym or location because they might not be dressing or displaying their gender in a way that others would find, they don't want to have to explain it every time. Why am I using this particular locker room? Why am I doing this, that, and the other thing? They just want to get to their workout, so we've kind of removed that. We also have a gardening group, that whole health and wellness thing. We actually have a food pantry at our location. And we're intent on not only having people, come out and reconnect with nature in that wellness aspect, but also to take anything that we grow there and turn it back towards our pantry to give back to the community.
So we talked, about some things right now related to physical health, and that leads into athletics and other things as well. And a real hot button issue in our country right now is this conversation about transgender athletes, and states are passing laws to regulate participation. Mm-hmm. But beyond just transgender athletes, there have been laws in general that that are addressing the transgender or LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. Can you guys talk about those laws and or talk about your reactions to this wave of legislation that's being passed? And basically, and I'll be honest, in my opinion, it pointed towards your community in a negative way.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate that the most at risk within our population is being targeted by politicians with all of these anti-trans bills in particular that are going around in all the states that prohibits particularly parents from making decisions for their children in regards to their health. A lot of the anti-transgender bills are focusing on the sort of cutting off their ability to access health services like hormone blockers, hormone therapy, transgender reassignment surgery, or affirming surgery. So it's really unfortunate that it's had to go that way. But hopefully, the federal government will step in at some point to say that that's not possible, that you're really overstepping your boundaries when it comes to a parent's ability to make a personal decision about their child.
So Stepping Stones is a welcoming, inclusive environment. Mm-hmm. We welcome people of all abilities and backgrounds and want to give them an opportunity and a place to be safe and mm-hmm. loved and to be able to learn in many different ways. Not every child has that kind of a place in their life mm-hmm. to be able to experience those things. And so from a parent standpoint, many parents, maybe not, they're not equipped or not aware of how to address any questions about coming out or a child realizing their identity mm-hmm. and starting to vocalize that, and the parents aren't equipped to really deal with that situation. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about that kind of a scenario where you're at home and your child is starting to come to you to talk about their identity, and as a parent you may not have the tools in the toolkit to be able to address and have that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that, even if you don't have a kid in the LGBTQ community, to be a great ally is to educate yourself, whether or not it's coming to one of our centers or going online and finding accurate, good resources to look at, watching YouTube videos and hearing how people discuss their own experiences can be very helpful. For parents with kids in the LGBTQ community, we work with an organization called PFLAG, and they have a group in our center. And that's a support group for parents. It's a huge change. You have a lot of expectations for your child, and now they're coming out as trans, or they're coming out as gay, or bi, or lesbian, and it kind of rocks your world. And as much as we say, our kids need support, our families and parents need support, whether or not that's getting family counseling or something like that. A lot of times it's just listening to your kid. We know that, you know, this is not something that, like, oh, the teenage years or the college years. Kids are coming out younger and younger, and it's not because some weird thing that's happening in our water. It's because they're being given the language to express themselves better. Mm-hmm. And so through that language, you know, they're communicating to us what they really need. And sometimes it might just be like, hey, mom, I want to try out these new pronouns. And being in a place where you kind of have to look into yourself and say, hey, you know, I need to do this for my child. This is, you know, they might want to try out a new name, and it might just stop there, you know, or it might continue and progress. But you being there for your child, whether or not you're a parent, a coach, a teacher, a mentor, a friend, just being there is the biggest thing that you can do for somebody as they're trying to figure themselves out.
So one step as a parent, as you just said, is being there for your child. The next step is being an advocate for your child, mm-hmm. because of the community reaction, mm-hmm. to your child's gender identity or whatever it is we're talking about here. What are some tips or some pieces of advice for parents in that area?
So how to communicate the rest of, or how
to everyone else. Like, once you accepted it, you know, like, accepted in your family, you still have to go out in the community and deal with people. And there are people who may not be as accepting.
Yeah.
There may be people who actually are working against you.
Yeah.
In that case,
I think that a well-educated parent that knows exactly what's going on with their child could be a fantastic advocate for their child. And instead of their child sort of like fielding those awkward questions that come from adults, the parent could step in and say, we're not doing that with this child. We're not doing that with my child. If you have questions, come to me. Or if you have questions, here are some resources that you can sort of go and read yourself, sort of like take the proactive approach of like educating yourself as to what it means so that you're not asking those awkward questions, mm-hmm. and you're not sort of like pointing out someone out in the middle of nowhere in public for no apparent reason. So,
because I only ask that because I know being out in community, mm-hmm. at times, you know, people do ask pointed questions,
yeah.
and they actually sometimes blame the parent. How dare you? How, yeah. you know, why, how are you allowing that child to do this right now?
Yeah.
You're setting that child up for, you know, a hard life, et cetera, mm-hmm. as if it's a choice.
Yeah, so it's funny that you say that because in my own coming out experiences, the first thing that my mom told me was, it's going to be so hard for you. Like, so many people are going to say bad things about you. You're going to have a difficult life. And I was like, well, if I had a choice to be straight and have an easier path forward, I would. But it's not a choice. You know, I am who I am. And after I told her that, it kind of clicked with her. And she was like, oh, okay, this is not so much a choice. It's who you are as a person. And you were born this way. So let's move forward and see like what that looks like. But you are correct. It is more difficult for the LGBT community to have a life and to live a normal life in society right now, even though parts of our community, like the gay and lesbian parts, are being more accepted. There are still other parts of our community. There's still a lot of biphobia. There are still not as much knowledge in the community about non-binary individuals. The transgender community continues to be outed, killed, and prosecuted for no apparent reasons. So, you know, there's other pieces of our community that haven't gained a place in society quite yet that we're still trying to fight for. So there is still a lot of work to do.
Sydney, you had a visible reaction to my question as well. And even though we have masks on, mm-hmm. you can still see facial expressions as well. So do you have anything to add there?
Well, just because, you know, as Edson was saying, it's not a choice. And so to frame it as, you know, like, even if it's a, you know, even if you all of a sudden develop something later on in life, whether or not it has anything to do with the LGBTQ community, you probably didn't choose that. And so when, you know, we're putting that like, well, if you only chose not to be gay, mm-hmm. or you need to act this way because otherwise it's going to be hard. Yeah, it's going to be hard. And the best thing, and that's why we tell parents, the best thing that you can do is to really just be there for your child. They're not going down an easy road, but just like anything that they don't have a choice on, you know, you're on that path with them. And that's going to look different for everybody, too. And the other thing, too, is a lot of parents have a concern and they come to me like, well, what happens if it's a mistake? What happens if they do a thing and they regret it later on down the line? Because the risk is so great when we talk about like suicidality, depression, anxiety, we in the mental community know that, you know what, it's just best to support them in the moment. And a lot of this stuff, especially at the younger ages, is reversible. You know, playing around with pronouns, playing around with a new name, very easily reversible. But even when we're talking about stuff like hormone blockers, you know, transitioning in terms of how you dress, those things are also completely reversible. So a lot of this medical stuff that is very, very concerning for parents, like, oh no, my kid's gonna do this and it's gonna mess up their health, it's not. It's very much reversible if that's what the child is deciding to do. A lot of people don't detransition, but if they were and that it ends up being a mistake or they have some regrets, a lot of that is still possible.
So I asked earlier about some of the laws in our country and the current political climate and things that are happening. Mm-hmm. As a person of color, I cringe when I hear people say or compartmentalize the civil rights movement and say that it happened back in the 60s, et cetera, and then it's over. And so any conversation that we have about LGBTQ plus rights is a civil rights conversation. So can you guys talk a little bit about that as well? Like this is part of an ongoing arc in American history, and that there are things that certain individuals in this country can do that others are still fighting for the right to be able to do the same thing.
Yeah. What is that saying? Like, if they come for one minority, they come for all. It's the same sort of thing. It's, you know, as minorities, we have to stick together because we know what the fight looks like, some more than others. So it's as simple as, you know, supporting other minorities, supporting the POC community, knowing that there is an intersectionality to every one of us. Not all of us are just POC. Not all of us are just LGBTQ. We don't live in silos, and our identities are not siloed off on themselves. So I am a POC LGBTQ individual because I am Latino and I am gay. So it's knowing that we don't live within those silos and knowing that if they come from one minority, they're coming for all minorities. So, you know, our rights are intricately like woven into each other. So we have to be able to support each other.
So now transitioning in for a little bit to the next conversation about June. Mm-hmm. June is Pride Month. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about Pride Month, the origins, and what, not necessarily at this point what the Triangle Center is doing, but just the overarching conversation or talk about what Pride Month is and why it's celebrated in June?
Yeah, so Pride Month, just a very short overview. Pride Month started from the Stonewall riots back in the, forgot the year, but
late 60s.
Yeah, I think so. Yep, Stonewall riots that happened in June, so that's sort of like why we have
a Stonewall was in New York City.
Exactly, Stonewall is in New York City.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's why we have like Pride Month in June as opposed to any other month. So yeah, that's a very short snippet of that history. It started with a person who identifies as trans throwing the first brick, or at least that's what the story is, and it was a clash between police. And the LGBTQ community at that point, because we were persecuted by the police, we were thrown in jail at higher instances. There was higher instances of sexual abuse as well. So that's sort of where the history of Pride Month started.
And so, just like, you know, for me, Black History Month, people always try to only talk about Black history in one
within that month,
one
yeah.
month, and it's only 28 days, yeah. so we get the short end of the stick on that too. But I'm just kidding. But during Pride Month, what are some of the things that happen nationally first? Like to talk about issues, culture, history, all kinds of things like that to help people better understand, you know, the community.
Well, let's see. So. Everyone understands what Pride Month is. Sort of everyone gets on the bandwagon that they're going to learn a bit more about the LGBTQ community. They're going to be better allies during the Pride during the month of Pride. So they start reaching out to organizations. They start getting more education. However, it can't just end in June. And those allyships and those allies can't just end in June. You know, the LGBTQ community doesn't just exist for one month and then it goes away. We're here all year long. We're gay all year long. So, you know, allyship isn't all year round 365 kind of a deal. Like, if you're an ally, you have to be an ally all day long, 365 days, 24/7. So it's sort of understanding that, yes, it's great to celebrate, and yes, it's great to have a month where you're sort of, the focus is on your community, but the community has to understand that it's not just that 1 month. It continues.
Yeah. I can completely understand, because I always joke about all the people who rolled out the Martin Luther King Jr. quotes,
right,
you know, during
exactly.
1 month, but they don't live that lifestyle
exactly.
the rest of the year. So,
but that's a big piece as well. You know, when we talk about it, especially in our school system with our youth, you know, they roll out Martin Luther King just for that month, and then he gets put back mm-hmm. away. The same thing happens with LGBTQ. We know our curriculums are not only whitewashed, but they only also represent a very heterosexual, cisgendered, normative push to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would want to encourage teachers, you know, at least in the month of June, if not beyond, to really look at your curriculums and make sure that you're showing a diverse range of things. You know, talking about the Stonewall riots in historical context, but even going older, we know gay people didn't start in the 1900s. They existed well beyond that, and those are things that you can talk about, making it seen in your math problems.
Yeah.
You know, they can be rewritten to be more inclusive. It's not always Johnny and his mom and his dad going to the store. It can be Johnny and his two moms. You know, showing kids and normalizing that for parents and the students themselves is massive to how they grow up and how they're going to interact with our community.
So that's actually, you know, one of the things that I think as a parent right now, I, you know that there is more attempt at representation,
mm-hmm.
but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So you mentioned those types of things. You know, what are, you know, beyond what you just said, are any other pieces of curriculum that you'd like to see changed in the schools so that kids understand and learn? I mean, for instance, you used the word cisgender, mm-hmm. and not everybody knows what that means. You know, so, you know, like I do, but, you know, there's yeah. a, you know, yeah. we have an audience right now who may not.
Yeah, I mean, that's that big thing of, like, you know, taking the time to educate yourself, using this kind of language in your class. You know, we often encourage teachers to lead the way by putting pronouns, you know, either on their desk or introducing themselves with their pronouns, or fantastically in Zoom, you can put it right after your name.
Yeah.
And it normalizes it for the kids. When they're seeing it, they're seeing an ally in that teacher. You know, I've had teachers come to me and tell me that they can't even do that, that that would be somehow against their moral standing. So when we talk about the little stuff, it doesn't seem so little when we get that much pushback. You know, putting a pride flag in your office, you know, educating yourself, asking the right questions, and then not expecting your students to be your educator, but mm-hmm. taking that responsibility upon yourself.
Yeah.
You know, being an ally in your school. A lot of, you know, you're allowed to have a GSA in your school, a Gay Straight Alliance in your school. They're going to need a staff representation for that club. Even if you're not in the community, you can be that staff. You know, standing up for your students. There's always a lot of stuff about transgender bathroom bills, making sure that, you know, your flyers and the representation that you're putting out to families represents the diversity of families that there are, whether or not it's people of color or gay relationships or whatever, making sure that, you know, you're making it seen and known that your kids are welcome there
mm-hmm.
are huge things that can make a huge difference.
Also, speaking about curriculums, the sex education is just horrible to begin with,
mm-hmm.
whether that's, you know, talking about heteronormative sex, let's not even get about LGBTQ sex. So that curriculum overall has to be updated 100% to be more inclusive of things other than just abstinence, because, you know, kids nowadays have access to so much information, and they are definitely going to engage in sexual conduct. You might as well give them the tools so that they make the correct decisions for themselves, so that you don't end up having an STI, or you don't end up having a situation where, you know, Plan B is necessary. So those are the things. Education is so key. And it's like one of the biggest things, I think one of the biggest failures that we see in educational systems.
I mean, I completely agree with that. I mean, a lot of people want to believe that it's not your child.
Oh, yeah.
But even sometimes, yeah. you know, even if it's not your child, it might be their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part now, most, especially when you're talking about teenagers, are walking around with a computer in their pocket
mm-hmm.
with their phone. So
exactly.
they have access to all kinds of information at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And also you have friends who may say or do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's very hard to put the genie back in the box, so
very
to speak.
Exactly.
You know.
And you might as well guide the conversation. It's out there already. So it gives you a bit of control.
So one of the things we talked about before was mental health. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, like there are some, you know, we don't need specifics with the numbers and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But talking about the mental health challenges for children who are trying to establish their identity, or at least, or they know their identity, but they're having trouble to basically introduce that to the world. Can you talk a little bit about some of these statistics and why this is such an important piece? And you can look at the paper if you want.
I'm going to cheat.
Yeah, cheat.
No, I know. But when we're talking about it, we're talking about 40% of LGBTQ youth contemplate committing suicide each year. 40%. So we're already talking about a small population, and among that, it's even greater. You know, when we're talking about generalized anxiety disorder, it's almost up to 70%. So we're talking about very serious mental health issues. What we see when it comes to resilience and combating this and to providing a safe space is when that number drops by 50% when that individual has a person in their life that is accepting and respecting. Mm-hmm. We know this works among all children. That person can be a coach, that person can be a parent, that person can be a religious figure in their life. Someone who is older who is being, you know what, I'm here with you, I'm supporting you, and I fully accept you. And if anyone takes anything away from this, if nothing else, I want you to ask yourself, can you be that one person? Can you be that person for a youth in your life? It doesn't even need to be your youth. It can be, you know, your friend's kid. You know, just telling them that you accept them, that you're there to listen to them, reduces that rate of suicidality by 50%. Something so small can make such a huge difference in somebody's life. Anything else, just do that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I mean, and that's so important to be able to say that, because, again, a lot of people ask, what can I do about this? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a large issue. I don't know how to address this. I don't know what to say. But really, just being there for someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, telling them you care. I'm listening. Yeah. Means so much to people. I mean, beyond, you know, the issues with any one particular community, I think that's true for everyone.
Yeah.
So quick question about Pride Month again.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the activities taking place here in Southwestern Connecticut with Pride Month?
Yeah, so this year, because of COVID, we couldn't do like our 7,000 person event that we have at Matthews Park here. So instead,
I miss Pride in the Park. I really do.
I know.
So much fun.
I was really hoping, but we just can't do it. The city of Norwalk would have had a fit. So so instead, what we're doing is we created about 18 smaller capacity limited events throughout the entire month. So we made a lot more work for ourselves, but it's fine. That are spread out throughout all of Fairfield County. So we're calling it Fairfield County Pride, and specific to youth and young adults, we have a family a Pride Family Field Day that's being hosted by the Boys and Girls Club of Greenwich. We have a youth silent disco that's being hosted here at TCC at our offices. And we also have a youth movie night that's being hosted in Stamford at the Bowtie Cinemas on Summer Street. That's specifically a youth movie of LGBTQ topics that's safe for everyone to watch. So, yeah.
I mean, it's just wonderful, all the things that you are doing for the youth in our community. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just an important outlet. And, you know, knowing family members of mine who have come out, mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have any of these supports or anything like that. And so it was much more difficult for them. And even, you know, to be honest with you, people in the family weren't as accepting initially. Mm-hmm. Now it is just, you know, it's accepted and that's who they are. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, people just didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that's great about all these programs and things that we're doing is we're working to build understanding as well, mm-hmm. because you can't really move forward until people at least understand,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. So one question, you know, one more question I have really is, are there any other key takeaways that you want people to bring away from this conversation today?
I mean, the big thing is that we're here for you.
Yep.
We're here for not only the individual who might be part of the community, but we're part of, you know, the community as a whole. That's the whole population of, you know, we're a lot of Connecticut, but also for the families as well. You don't have to go through this alone. We have counselors, we have groups. Some of the groups that we have specifically for youth and families is our Transgender and Gender Questioning Youth Forum. You know, we have our Teen Queer Space. We have our youth hangout, and then we work with PFLAG, which is that really great parental support group.
Mm-hmm.
And any of these can be found on our website, and feel free to reach out to us. Even if you don't know if we're the right place for you, I can help point you in the right direction.
Edson, do you have anything?
Took the words out of my mouth. I don't even know why I'm here.
So with that being said, then, I want to thank you both for being here today. Like, it really, this was an important conversation, special. I look forward to all the events taking place in June. And when Stepping Stones reopens, look forward to doing more to welcome, welcome the Triangle Center and your community back here into our building. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Thank you
for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Under the Cupola. If you are interested in more information about the Triangle Community Center and its resources and programs, please visit www.ctpridecenter.org. That's www.ctpridecenter.org. We know there are so many important conversations to be had, so follow us wherever you get your podcasts to hear more discussions like this one. Until next time.